I actually really like how everyone's calling it a realignment, because that is what it feels like. When you see that picture of Trump, Tulsi, RFK, and Elon, you're like, this is the most Democratic Republican Party we've ever had. They represent where normal Americans have shifted. You know, the progressive left in particular just went so far left and then gaslit everybody and told them that they were just white supremacists and racists while they went off the freaking deep end.
Hello, welcome back to the Brendan O'Neill Show with me, Brendan O'Neill, and my special guest this week, Bridget Fettersy. Bridget, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
It's great to have you back on. We need a guide to what's going on in America, and I think you might be that person. And so much has happened since we last talked. We've had a couple of conversations over the past year or so. So much has happened in the US since we last talked. And I guess I want to kick off by asking you what the vibe is like there now that Trump is back in charge. You know, it was the vibes election, but I want to know, what is the vibe now that it's Trump's world? He dominates, he rules, he won, thanks to people like you who voted for him. What's the vibe like in Trump's new America?
It's interesting. I'm trying to get a sense of it. It's still very fresh, and doing comedy is a good way to get a sense of that. I think, the liberal people, progressives, leftists, whatever you want to call them, people who voted for Kamala, people who were anti-Trump, are very much still in their feelings, and I've been noticing that just doing comedy. People are a little more raw than I think normal. The overall vibe seems to be, it just depends on what America you're watching. You know, I've perceived this sense of two Americas, although I think that's, it's all so reductionist. And I realize I don't necessarily love putting things in left, right, and the left and the right, but it is just for the sake of, even when you look at the election, it's splitting quite close, the people who even go out and vote. And then there's a large population of people who don't even vote. But it seems like the people who voted for him are optimistic, and the people who didn't are pessimistic, which is just what we go through in America every election cycle, where one group of people feels optimistic. And, you know, you always see this with like the economy, where depending on who's in power, the people who are, you know, on the team that's not in power will feel like the economy is bad. And then it reverses the minute the power center switches. It's so much like perception and versus what's actually real. And it's weird. So I wonder if anything's changed, and only because I have a very small, you know, for me, I wonder about like advertising dollars. You know, it's like, has anything really changed? My YouTube algorithm seemed to change, but I don't know if that is, you never know if it's just does correlation equal causation? Who knows? But things seem to loosen up for me around the election and after. Where we have just been, it feels like getting throttled. We had a brand turn us down because our show is too political, and you would think, and they sponsor Joe Rogan, so you would think that they would see the writing on the wall and want to be sponsoring shows like mine that aren't necessarily like the normal late night shows that you see. But I'm by no means like the Daily Wire or anything. I'm still taking shots at everybody, but it's, you know, brands are still kind of weary of sponsoring political. And it's interesting because it's like, you have no problem sponsoring political content that's the right kind of politics. But me, because I'm center right, let's say now, which is really just normie America, I think, they would say that my content is too political. So I'm not sure. Like, I'm not, you know, we'll see what everybody was kind of waiting, like in a wait and see pattern. Hollywood wasn't making anything. They weren't they're in a free fall. I think that could be a whole other topic of discussion. And media's in a free fall. So I think, and you know, Trump is a loose cannon. And now we're firing rockets. Like everything feels very, it felt like there was this initial rush of optimism. And now as the dust is settling, I'm not really sure. I'm interested to see what the kind of fallout is.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if the advertising dollars do finally catch up with the political shift or the vibe shift, as people might want to call it. And if they might actually, you know, in an uncomplicated, straightforward way, agree to work with shows like yours, podcasts like yours, which, as you say, are not woke left bollocks, which is the stuff that they would normally be very happy to support. It'll be interesting to see if that shifts. But one thing that has struck me since the election, maybe I'm wrong on this, but it feels like, even though you're right that there is a lot of rawness, and I'm sure lots of the Kamala camp and her supporters are feeling very raw at the moment, but it feels like there hasn't been the same meltdown as there was in 2016. It feels like we haven't had Beanie Woman screaming in the streets, you know, she became a meme forever as a consequence of that. And that, you know, we've had people asking for therapy in the workplace and students being given a couple of days off so they can recover. And The Guardian offered their members of staff therapeutic treatment for after Trump's victory. So we've had that kind of stuff. But it feels like there hasn't been as noisy or as broad a meltdown as there was last time Trump won. Is that your feeling as well?
It's interesting. My editor, Matt McDonald, and I were just talking about this because he's like, everyone's fine. Because I had a tweet go like insanely viral. And I think I started like a nationwide discussion on what is cool. And it was really just, you know, I understand the term vibe shift, but I actually really like how everyone's calling it a realignment because that is what it feels like. When you see that picture of Trump, Tulsi, RFK, and Elon, you're like, this is all Democrats. Like this is the most Democratic Republican Party we've ever had. And they represent where normal Americans have shifted, you know? And again, it's not really that Americans have shifted all that much. It's that the progressive left in particular just went so far left and then gaslit everybody and told them that they were just white supremacists and racists while they went off the freaking deep end. And I do feel like this election really represented that. Now California is like still counting votes, which is insane to me. And so I'm not sure the popular vote will be as much as they, you know, it was initially, which is kind of funny to me that it's the Democrats' inability to like count votes fast that they can't, they end up having this narrative of it being a blowout, even if it actually isn't, because by the time they count the votes 2 weeks later or whatever, it's maybe within a more slim margin than it was initially thought. So it is still like a very divided country. But I do think there has been a big realignment in this. And in America that is represented in just how literally everyone but white liberal women and aging boomers shifted to the right. Everyone else, even Gen Z men and women. I mean, Gen Z men, I was not surprised at all, but even the women voted for Trump and or shifted right. So there's like this realignment that's kind of happening, and it's I've never known in my whole lifetime. I was saying this on Dumpster Fire the most recent one. It is like the Andrew Breitbart prophecy. You know, he's famous for saying politics are downstream of culture. And the right, new right, has been very much about, well, we've got to get the culture. How do we get the culture? And my whole tweet that went viral is just saying, well, you know, I've never known the right to really have any cultural capital. I didn't say it like this. Like the freak out you're seeing on the left is because they've lost control, not just of the narrative, but of the monopoly that they've kind of held on cool. And a lot of people are pushing back and saying, you know, it's been a whole thing. But I've never in my lifetime known anything right-coded to be cool. Like the young kids are cheering for it. The athletes are doing Trump dances. These people can talk to me about what like an aging lady thinks about cool. I'm not saying I'm the arbiter of it, nor am I saying I'm cool, but it doesn't take an idiot to look and see that there is a cultural shift to the right that helped his win. This is why Trump won. He was cool with the UFC. He went on Rogan. He did the podcast circuit. You can sit there and yell at me, but he dodged a bullet and lived. Like he came off as kind of cool. And people, this is America, we're very shallow. So long-winded answer to your question about the freakout. I think the freakout has been more virtual. It's not marching in the streets. It would be kind of weird to do that since we've already had 4 years of Trump. Like you don't have that kind of excitement for protest. I do think there were a lot of normie liberals who weren't excited about Kamala and voted for her anyway. So they're not feeling essentially devastated. They're just like, oh, well, that person I didn't really want to vote for lost. And, you know, they weren't excited about her. They tried to manufacture all this excitement, but I didn't see that on the ground or hear it from anyone. They were like, I'll vote for her because she's the Democratic Party leader and our option. But there does seem to be like a big freak out in the media class as usual. There does see all these women are shaving their hair, you know, and having these like, so the freak out to me feels more virtual this time around.
This week's episode of The Brendan O'Neill Show is brought to you by Beckett's Gin. If you're on the hunt for some Christmas gifts, look no further than Beckett's. Their gins and whiskies will make the ideal presents for your loved ones this Christmas. Ever since Beckett's started sponsoring us around this time last year, their drinks have been a staple in my drinks cabinet. All their gins are made with hand-picked English juniper berries from Surrey and are distilled just down the road in London. Their classic dry gin makes the perfect G&T, or if you want to push the boat out, it can be a great base for some delicious cocktails. And the Beckett's website has you covered with plenty of recipes for those. One of my favourite drinks that Beckett's has to offer is their slow gin. They take their classic dry gin and steep it with the finest slow berries, giving it an incredible rich almondy flavor. I can highly recommend serving this with ginger ale for the perfect warming winter beverage. I'm also really excited to announce that Beckett's has recently added a whiskey to their already fantastic lineup. Their single malt English whiskey is actually the first in the world to mature in slow gin casks. That gives it a beautifully smooth quality with notes of vanilla fudge and black cherries. It goes down a treat. If you want to get your hands on some of this unbelievably tasty whiskey, don't wait, because Beckett's is only producing about 300 bottles a year. The best part is that fans of this show can get a 20% discount on all Beckett's spirits, including their gin and their brand new whiskey and more. Just head over to beckettsgin.co.uk/Brendan to claim your discount now. That's beckettsgin.co.uk/Brendan to get 20% off.
Yeah, I think that's right, actually. You know, which is a relief in some ways, because we don't have to look at all those women in their pussy hats on the streets for, you know, for weeks on end. That was so depressing. And those kind of the anti-Trump marches that we saw last time, we had loads of them in London as well with all the kind of Hitler stuff. I think people have just lost the appetite for that. And as you say, they tend to be doing it on the internet. And of course, there have been the really ridiculous examples of people howling like demented wolves on TikTok and crying and screaming and all that kind of stuff, which is quite entertaining to watch. On the realignment, I think you're absolutely right about that. You know, vibe shift / realignment. I mean, realignment is a better description of what has happened. And that picture you mentioned of Tulsi and RFK and Elon Musk and Trump and the others there, someone tweeted that image and said the Democrats won the election. And, you know, it's not entirely wrong. That's kind of what happened in a weird way. let's talk a little bit about that realignment, and let's talk a little bit about your role in it, because you did this great video which I shared with all my friends shortly before the election, where you said that you were going to vote for Trump, and you signed off with it. You signed off with this really kind of go Trump, but in a very hesitant way.
No, I was like, go Trump? Like, yeah, go Trump. I guess I'm rooting for him now.
Yeah, and that I thought that hesitant questioning statement of go Trump actually captured probably how a lot of people in your position felt, which is how have we ended up here? You know, someone who's people who are kind of, you know, maybe were countercultural or liberal or progressive or leftish or whatever it might be, have ended up in a situation where they plumbed for Trump over Kamala. And there are quite a few people like that. So explain to us a little bit about what drove you to that position.
It was a bunch of things. And I know I'm not alone because I've heard from so many people since I did that video. And it was a gamble. You know, as the comedian in me did not want to put that statement out there at all, because I don't think comedians should take sides. I think you're a mercenary. You owe no one anything. I don't believe anyone should be cheerleading politicians in general. I did not endorse him. It wasn't like me being like, I endorse this man and you should too. I guess it was a tacit endorsement just by virtue of telling people that I voted for him, but it was more just being honest with my audience about what I did, because I'm in a weird position of an accidental pundit. So I am a comedian, but I also got caught in the crossfire of the culture wars and often write columns where I'm trying to make sense of the world around me and trying to make sense of the political shifting culture stuff around me. And the most recent column that I had that went kind of bonkers for Spectator was about how, like, inside the very incoherent mind of a suburban mom. And my friend Mary Catherine Hamm and I had a great podcast about, were suburban women going to break for Trump? Because in all of our group chats, anecdotally, we're like, so we're all going to do this, huh? Like, we're going to vote for Trump? Is that what's happening? And I couldn't reconcile, and I know many people can, and I completely understand. And people were like, no, that's a completely coherent position to have, to be able to say, I don't want Kamala to win, but I can't vote for Trump. So that was where I kind of found myself. And I had, and it created a lot of cognitive dissonance within me, because it felt cowardly not to be able to vote for him. And then when I thought about it, was like, I say it was like death by a million cuts. It was like a million little things. And it would take me 2 days to name them all on this podcast. And it started in 2015 and went all the way through to 2020. And then you had COVID and all of the government overreach there. And I was in California, so experienced it more heavily than many people in America did. And then I literally moved my family to get away from a left-dominated state and their insane policies around gender and, like, teachers keeping secrets from, you know, the parents about the kid, just insane stuff. My husband worrying that he's going to lose his license as a therapist if he doesn't affirm the gender of whatever, anyone who comes in, not being able to treat somebody, you know, holistically and in a way that you should be treating these people, which is, you know, this is oftentimes a symptom of other things going on in your life. Let's address that before we start you on a path of irreversible treatments. And so many things. So I look at that. And then when it came down to it, I really was like, there was a part of me that wanted to vote for him. And I saw him on Rogan, and I'm not saying this was like the thing that made up my mind, because I had already voted for him when I saw that. But he came across as, I think a lot of people were like, oh, he's still going to be Trump. You know, he still is. But there seems to be people around him, Elon for one, who's, you know, launching rockets into space. And I'm no Elon stan by any means, but he's not an idiot. And I think a lot of people just saw the direction America was headed in and were like, no. And I wanted, when it came down to it, I'm like, I didn't vote for anyone in 2020. I just didn't vote top of ticket at all because I couldn't vote for either one. And then when it came down to it, I was like, no, I want to be part of the popular vote. That's like, fuck you. It was a protest vote. It was like, no, enough of this nonsense. And there was, you know, there's the way that I was told that all I'm supposed to care about is abortion. And this is the only thing I'm supposed to care about as a woman. When you guys can't even define women, I've spent 8 years raging against how you're erasing women's only spaces and making us irrelevant. Lesbian bars are being like, don't exist anymore. And you're going to tell me that you care about women when you can't even define what a woman is when it's convenient, and when it is convenient, you can. And I don't know. I think a lot of people were just tired of being gaslit. So much gaslighting over the years, around groceries and things like that, where they're like, no, it doesn't cost what you see it's costing. And tired of being gaslit about news stories. You know, there was a lot more infrastructure after 2020. You had people like you had the things like the Free Press and Glenn Greenwald and all these people who are with kind of old guard media pivot out and start their own media empires. And so there was a lot more infrastructure from 2020 to 2024, trigonometry, for people to go seek other opinions that weren't just this, like, as I kept calling it, like the approved narrative, you know, they could go elsewhere. And I mean, God bless Joe for keeping the Overton window from slamming shut. I really don't know what it would look like without him. So it was like death by a million cuts to get me to that point. My video, I tried to keep it very succinct because it was a couple of big things like free speech. And that was another thing that I realized. It's like when I'm using double speak on the internet, like saying unalive and not being able to talk about, we're like, oh, the jib jab, like whatever fucking ridiculous nonsense words I have to use to try and work around the algorithm so my channel doesn't get demonetized. That is coming from one side. That is not coming from the right. That if Elon hadn't bought Twitter, again, I'm not a huge like, oh, like we, I've been joking, like we all need to pick a billionaire who's going to adopt us. That's the world we live in now. Just find someone, you know, you believe in and hopefully they'll adopt you. Thank God he bought it, because you couldn't even, I think people started seeing like, oh, I'm not alone. Feeling like this, like saying boys and girls are different is like an okay thing to say. Cause I do think people were so siloed and afraid. They really were like, and I said this for right in the aftermath of the election, like, ah, oh, thank God. Like, whoo, you guys don't believe men can get pregnant? I thought everyone believed that for a minute in America. Like, I thought I might be like just a crazy old lady who is behind the times.
It's funny that you talk about Twitter and X and the vibe shift there since Elon Musk took over, because one aspect of the meltdown that has happened since Trump won is people leaving X and going to Blue Sky, whatever the hell Blue Sky is. And it's interesting because even The Guardian has left X, which is a pretty big deal, and some other newspapers in Europe have as well. And The Guardian says, oh, it's become a horrible place now. It used to be nice and interesting, but now it's horrible. You know, for years before Musk, women in particular were getting banned for life for stating biological facts. I mean, the craziest case.
Megan Murphy,
who was banned for life for saying he about some fat bloke in Canada who tried to get immigrant women to wax his testicles. And she was thrown off for saying that's him. It's so crazy. But I, in relation to all of that, maybe you've already kind of answered this with your death by a thousand cuts comment and the video you put out explaining why you voted for Trump. But is this a case then of that the left lost you or that Trump won you? Because I think it's really interesting what you say, that it wasn't enough for you this time just to not vote. because I think you're right. And a lot of people, people voted for Trump for many different reasons. I mean, we're talking about more than 70 million people. There will have been economic reasons, class reasons, inflation reasons, cultural reasons, all sorts.
Immigration,
of course. But a lot of people, I think, probably did vote for him, as you say, as a fuck you. So it kind of added extra oomph to your disgruntlement with where the left was going and the kind of left tyranny and the wokeness and all the other stuff. It really gave that an extra kick if you then put an X in Trump's box. So was there a way that he won you over? Was there something he did that made you think, okay, this guy's interesting? Or was it really just a death by a thousand cuts from the other side?
I don't know that he won me over so much as one. And this was something that was kind of talked about in many friend groups at dinners and all the things leading up to it, when we were like, are we going to vote for him? Are we not? How are you feeling? When we would have these conversations about it, people who were RFK Jr. fans, and were they going to be able to kind of cross the bridge to vote for him? And I was also of the mind, and many people were, that because of the last election, everybody, I think, in America on both sides was like, whatever it is, I hope it's decisive. We don't want to get into some kind of hanging chad situation. We don't want to be like my friend Michael Malice. He said that I said, although I remember him saying it, but we were talking about Trump, and I was like, I swear to God, just like, fuck it. Like, I'm going to vote for Trump because fuck it. And he's like, that should be his campaign message. If I was his campaign manager, that's the message I would put out. Vote for Trump because fuck it. And then it got to be like, vote for Trump because fuck that. Like, it just, again, like leading up to it, one thing after another, particularly around Biden being dementia, everybody saying it, them saying, oh no, he's doing backflips when you can't see him. He's perfectly fine. Like, you gaslit us about, no, these are mostly peaceful protests. You gaslit us about the cost of groceries. You gaslit basic things like being able to tell the difference between a man and a woman and when an elderly person is in decline. You're telling us not to believe our lying eyes, and people are going to be resentful of that and react to that. And my vote was very much against that it was like a true protest vote. I don't know that he won me over, although I think my feelings about him shifted from, there was this, I do this stand-up routine and it actually always does very well, where I talk about the day that he was shot at and nicked, and how he, you know, everybody knows it. He went down, he jumps up, and he's like, fight, fight, fight. And then I'm like, did Donald Trump just turn me on? And I joke about that, but there was something I feel like after that moment that shifted around my perception of him, whether he's a showman, whether he is, which I think he can be both, a genius at knowing what to do in a moment to be a showman. I still don't think an average person who's been shot at is, in that moment, I was like, oh, okay, maybe he is more of like a man than I thought he was. Because all my guy friends who might have been not against Trump are like, so he just did what a man did. I'm like, okay, but see, I had the impression that he was actually a coward who was putting on these airs of being kind of an alpha male. But if you're telling me that's just what like a normal male would do, then my perception of him was wrong and I need to readjust that thinking. And whether it was just him knowing what to do in that moment for the cameras, still, there were bullets flying at him and someone behind him was dead. So not everyone in that position is going to jump up and do what he did. And I also said, like, he had the presence of mind. I can't imagine what America would have looked like if we didn't know for hours if Trump was dead or alive. Like, we don't even want to conceive of what that in between could have looked like. So I don't know that that I do actually think that was a moment that shifted my perception of him enough to be like, I can probably pull the lever for him. And I might regret it. I've said this. I might like eat the all of these words. I'm gonna be like, I made a huge mistake. But I feel that way about other presidents. So this is like, it actually kind of feels nice to, it felt nice for me to actually, you know, people are like, I thought you were politically homeless. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't mean I can't still vote for someone. That doesn't mean it doesn't mean I'm not going to take a stand on something. It just means I still don't feel like either party perfectly represents me. And then someone, when I wrote that piece, I got a lot of really thoughtful feedback, surprisingly, and on the internet. And someone said something to me on Twitter that really stuck out to me. And they said, just vote for whoever, whichever party you think is going to leave you alone more. And I was like, that's actually a very good way to determine who you're going to vote for. Because it's not this party who's trying to ban firewood, gas stoves, and like literally everything and anything and make it a nanny state and censor everybody. It's certainly not them.
Yeah, it's not them. Absolutely not. It's interesting what you say about that image of Trump jumping up and saying, fight, fight. Because that was just undeniably impactful. And anyone who says it wasn't is just so far down Trump derangement that they can't see the truth. Because I'm not sure I would have stood right up and put my fist in the air. I probably would have gone underneath the lectern and hidden or whatever. I'm sure lots of people would. So it was an admirable response, there's no question. And in relation to alpha men and whether that's something men do or not, I did want to ask you about the Democrats' view of men in this election, because it has been unbelievably and unwittingly hilarious. You know, the whole white dudes for Kamala thing and that Kamala campaign, you know, real men vote for Kamala Harris. And it was just the most ridiculous looking men, you know, kind of beards and check shirts. And it was, I couldn't even believe it was real. What did you make of how the Democrats think tried to appeal to men and what that told us about them as a party?
Yeah, again, I mean, this is something that just me kind of speaking like a normie, it sometimes goes viral because I'm saying what a lot of people are thinking. And I was making fun of the you know, like men for Harris video. And I was saying the Democrats are realizing too late that they've Bud Lighted their brand. Meaning that they like lost normies completely, normie men in particular. But now I expanded on that in a video that got hundreds of thousands of views. And I expanded on it even more in a piece for Spectator about how they can try and tell me that this wasn't happening. But I was working at men's magazines in 2015, 2016, 2017. I knew what those staffs looked like. I knew what they were putting out there. It was insane. I was like, how are you guys writing for men? You don't know any men, not any like normie dudes. What is going on? How is this Playboy? How is this? Mel Magazine was another one I was writing for. And it was just like getting so bananas. I'm like I mentioned in my column that there was this insane, you know, editor's note on a piece about how men can be supportive in abortion. Then it was like, we realize not only women can have abortions. I'm like, you've lost the fucking plot. You can't, if you're putting, you are a men's magazine, allegedly. And so I was there and saw, and you know, it's Me Too happened. I think a lot of people really underestimate a moment in history that has again been kind of memory hold, but not a lot of people. And I know it was very instructive for me, was the Kavanaugh hearings, where I was like, what the, like, this is insane. They will truly try and destroy your life with nonsense. And they were dragging up all this stuff. And I think a lot of that was like, believe all women and all this stuff. And then cut to October 7th, for example, we don't believe any of those women. And it's all I think it's, again, death by a thousand cuts. You're just, it's like, there was just so much hypocrisy over and over and over again. And I think it just wore people out. And you can't be like the boy who cried Hitler for 8 years. You just, and now you have like Joe and Mika who were, this is Hitler, literally Hitler. Kamala's going to defeat Hitler. And then they go to Mar-a-Lago and they're like kissing the ring of Trump. So because their ratings are collapsing. And you're like, you guys didn't believe any of this. And you literally made normal people completely mentally deranged. Like Trump derangement syndrome is a thing. And it has been pumped into the brains of vulnerable people by the media and this whole class of people who, as I've been screaming for 8 years, do not believe it. I'm like, they all hang out together. If you were in my position and went to the places I went and saw the things I've seen, you would know none of these people believe any of this crap that they're selling you. It is all just like an act for the plebs, I guess, to like divide the people. And it's, and the more toxic thing is, you know, the ideology that tells you that the West is horrible and that America is horrible and that white men, which again, that's all they've been hearing for 8 to 10 years now, inherently evil and horrible. Wow, you lost these people? I can't believe it. This is a shock that you would have lost these voters over the years after telling them they're all irredeemable pieces of shit. Like, why? And then they come out with these ridiculous stereotypes of men, but being played by, oftentimes bisexual or gay actors, as you go into the histories of all these people, like the guy sitting on the tailgate with his hands crossed, you know, palm on palm, like exactly like a man sits. It's just so, it's a parody to me. And they've lost such touch with, they really thought Tim Walz was going to be the guy that like restored masculinity to the whose idea was that? Whose idea was that?
Hi, it's Brendan here. I want to let you know some exciting news. My new book is out now. It's called After the Pogrom, 7th of October, Israel and the Crisis of Civilization. And it's available right now from Amazon. I'm really proud of this book. It is an unflinching account of how the West failed the moral test of 7th of October 2023, which of course is the day that Hamas and other militants invaded Israel and unleashed barbarism. The book documents in chilling detail how activists, academics, and others in the West ended up making excuses for Hamas's violence, ended up taking the side of the pogromists against the pogrom's victims, and ended up, in the process, turning their backs on the values of civilization. The book is fundamentally a call to arms for Western civilization. It makes the case for restoring Enlightenment values and standing with Israel while it's under attack by radical Islamists. I don't know if an author is allowed to describe his own book as essential reading, but I really do think it's essential reading. It's called After the Pogrom, 7th of October, Israel and the Crisis of Civilization, and you can get your copy right now on Amazon.
It was that was a classic. That was hilarious. And, you know, the tampons in boys' bathrooms and all that stuff. I mean, all of it was just so crazy. But in relation to, you've mentioned already Trump going on Rogan, and he went on other podcasts as well. He went on the blokish podcast, the kind of bros podcast, a lot of those, which I thought was such a fantastically clever move. Firstly, because it meant that he was circumventing the mainstream media. He's very wary, for good reason, of the mainstream media. He just cut through the mainstream media and went straight to his own audiences. But also, it meant that he was talking to loads and loads of young men. Apparently, Barron Trump was instrumental in encouraging him to go on some of these podcasts, and I mean, that's what young men do. They listen to these podcasts. You know, when I was on Rogan earlier this year, I'm sure you've had a similar experience. You just find yourself being stopped or, you know, talked to by young men who heard you say this or that. And it's such an interesting audience to me, because I think these young men are good guys for the most part. I think there's always a risk that some of them will drift off into the underbelly of the internet with horrible, gross people like Andrew Tate. But most of them are good guys. They feel utterly demeaned by the democratic establishment and other establishments who, as you say, have treated them as irredeemable pieces of shit and tell them, don't expect to be a breadwinner. Don't expect to have a job for life. Stop being an arrogant white prick. You know, check your privilege. Constant hectoring. It's amazing more of these young men haven't drifted into the darker bit of the internet, given all the abuse they get from the elites. But they are out there, they're listening to these pods, and Trump connected with them. And I think that was probably one of the more positive parts of this election, because he did manage to draw in, I think, a lot of men who otherwise felt incredibly disconnected from politics. Do you think some of this might be a bit of a corrective to the past few years of Me Too, the Kavanaugh hearings, the hysteria around all that stuff? Do you think this, we might finally see a corrective to that at last?
Yeah. And I honestly, like, do you know how big of a, thank God for Joe. He could use his power so, like, that guy is so humble. He has a great family. All he does is talk about how he loves his wife and his kids. Like, he is a good man. He's a good example. He wants people to work out. He wants them to better themselves, read some books, take some cold plunges, learn how to cook some steak, hunt. Like, this is the guy you guys are. Do you know how bad it could be if anyone else had that kind of power? And they do drift. But I think what I've found with young men that I've talked to is they'll go to that dark side, but come back. You know, they'll kind of go to the edge and then go, oh, okay, these guys are racist. These guys, you know, the good ones, we might lose some, but I don't think people are as easily radicalized because there are people like Joe and there are these corrective elements within that spectrum of, let's call it the manosphere for lack of a better word. And Chris Williamson. And these guys have millions of followers and they really just are like, so they're, I mean, there's kind of a joke that like Joe is Oprah for dudes, but they are a little bit like a little self-helpy in some ways where they're just trying to make guys laugh. And I think this shift of the working class to the right is really interesting and will be studied for many decades to come. But that was something very obvious that was happening to me because I listened to Rogan when I was working on farms and I listened to him when I was waiting tables. Like, you know, it was because it was the only place at the time during like 2015, 2016, those Trump years where you could hear people talking like you talked at work. It's like people were like, oh, the way they talk to each other and like the way they say gay or whatever. I'm like, have you never been on a job site? Have you never, you've clearly never done manual labor. You're just telling on yourself. If you've never spent, like I have the spider veins to show how many hours on my feet I've spent in my lifetime. And it is an insane amount, but your best friend clearly isn't a flight attendant. You know, do you talk to your hairdresser? It's wild to me how disconnected the, you know, Carol Markowitz term pajama class has become from the people that all serve them, basically. And I think he really held the line for people to just be able to talk like normies, like normal people who are working, the working class people. And that shift you see, again, this is Andrew Breitbart prophecy, like the culture shifted that way just with all of these podcasts, which was genius for him to do. I was saying this, I'm like, if you're trying to get to the independent voter, the person like me who does not watch CNN or MSNBC and certainly isn't watching an Oprah town hall and is not listening to Brené Brown or Call Her Daddy, you're going to go on the podcast. Like, that's where we all are. That is a no-brainer. I don't know. Like, when he was doing this, I'm like, this is genius. Whoever put him up to this is genius, because this is where the people who want to be persuaded are going to be persuaded. And again, something that I think people don't realize is that there was a Better the Devil You Know kind of vote where it was like, all right, well, you've done Rogan, I've done Rogan. It's not easy to sit there for 3 hours. He didn't crumble. It's like you feel mentally exhausted at a certain point where you're like, what the hell are we talking about? How many rabbit holes have we gone down? It's a workout. It certainly takes endurance. And you can get tripped up. And he did. I know if you know what that takes, it's like, I can see why Kamala wouldn't want to do it. But I think a lot of Americans at the end of the day who either didn't vote at all, because you're seeing that with Democrats, there were just a lot who didn't show up, especially in blue states. They just didn't know her. And she didn't give them an opportunity to know her. And Trump at least went out there and was willing to put himself out there, talk for hours, joke around. That, you know, that video of him with Theo Von that was hilarious went viral. And he still managed to steal a news cycle that the Dems should have had in the bag. Like, they were having their big DNC and he was going viral for like a silly interaction with Theo Von. And this is, again, I think the mainstream media, and you see this in Hollywood a lot, like they always undermine YouTubers and people like the new media. And it's like, do you guys know how much money these guys make and how they've created their own empires without you? I don't think you do. I know you're like, oh, those silly little YouTubers. But they've got real power and money, and their audience knows them and trusts them. And that's where all the young men are. And it's certainly where all the independent women are. I was shocked in my subscriber site. So many of the independent women who were either like anti-Trump, libertarian, could not see themselves voting for Trump. Every one of them copped to voting for him. Every one of them. And when I was hearing that, I was like, wow. I mean, I had somebody in my life who I was like, there's no way she's ever going to vote for him. I just figured she wouldn't vote. And when she was like, yeah, I did it, I think I'm going to vote for him, I'm like, holy shit, he might win.
Yeah. Those are the moments when you think, oh, something's really changing now.
Something's really like, this is a person who I was truly shocked when she told me that she voted for Trump. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You might actually win this.
It's so true that, after when I did Rogan, I was mentally exhausted at the end of it in a nice way, but I was just
that guy
knackered.
Is a machine.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He is a machine. He will do that and then go do 2-hour-long sets of comedy at night. It's fucking insane. People do not know, like, the endurance that takes mentally is another level.
It's another level what he does, and even just being on his show is tiring, as you say, and. The fact that Trump could do that in an era of sound bites, when, you know, all politicians really care about is optics and sending a little tiny message. And he did those stunts as well. He worked at McDonald's for 15 minutes and he danced around in a high-vis vest and drove a garbage truck. So he did the stunts too. But to be able to do that kind of long-form conversation and for Kamala not to do it, and apparently some of the reports coming out now is because some of her staff thought she might get cancelled or she might lose the support of the woke. I mean, really sums up how far down the rabbit hole of madness these people have gone. I did want to ask you what happens to the Democrats now, because I just find the whole Democrat operation depressing at this moment. And in fact, when I was in New York a few weeks ago and I was talking to people who were going to vote Trump and I was talking to people who were going to vote Kamala, what I found is that the people who supported Kamala were often quite depressed people. They weren't full of the joy that she was talking about at the start of her campaign. They were saying, oh no, he's a Nazi. The world will burn if he gets into power. It'll be a disaster. Oh my God, it's terrible. We have to vote for her to save the planet, blah, blah, blah. Whereas the Trump voters I was talking to were optimistic. They were angry, but they were also optimistic. They were upbeat. They were making jokes. You know, they were kind of, there was a lightness about many of them who I spoke to. And it did make me wonder what becomes of the Democrats now. Where do you think they go? Will they double down on all the 1,000 cuts that pissed off people like you, or will they have an awakening and try and do something different?
I hope they have an awakening and try and do something different. I don't know though. I don't know. It depends on how many people in their base are actually you know, believers, because this is not, we're not talking about, this is a real ideology. It's not something, as you wrote about brilliantly in your book was also another thing that shifted me to voting for Trump. And I, just because I thought so much about, you know, people were like, oh, anti-civilizational behavior. That was one of the big criticisms I had with my video. And I kept thinking about your book, and I kept thinking about the people tearing down the posters of the little kids, like that kind of behavior, guys. And they'll be like, oh, January 6th. I'm like, that's, I watch cities burn. Okay. Like, you can't tell me that there isn't an anti-civilizational, and that's the thing, they want to tell you that none of this stuff is happening, that there isn't this ideology. And it is, so I don't know. Everyone's like, wokeism is dead, this and that. I'm like, this is a, like a religion that people have subscribed to now for going on a decade. And I, and when you're the opposition, I don't know, now you're the persecuted martyrs. And so I don't know that it doesn't become more entrenched. And I don't know that they're just going to be able to drop it, because unlike many people in the media who knew this was all bullshit and have just been cowards and not saying it as they all come forward. And this is the other thing, you see this wave of people who are like, I felt this way for years. Like, okay, welcome to the club. Awesome to have you. Great. You did it when there was no, like, I get it. I get it. I'll take like any coalition, but you, why didn't you speak up when you had the chance and you have a platform and you have power and you could have, like, why, if you actually felt this way, it's one thing if you were converted over time, but if you actually felt this way the whole time and now you're just speaking up, like, you're a coward. I'm sorry. You shouldn't be getting like accolades for being a coward for 5 years or whatever. And I don't know. I think I worry about it, because people are like, I think what they're doing is, and this, I could be wrong, I think they're saying, oh, the Democrats went so far left because they thought that's what their base wanted. But I don't, but at the same time, I'm like, no, this is like a whole ideology that they've literally been teaching in. And this was something you addressed so well in your book, in our institutions. It's like, it's corrosive. It's in our HR departments now. It's, and more importantly, it's in your, in people's minds where they've internalized all of this stuff and they believe that, that, you know, this is all true. So you would have to have a foundational shift of your entire worldview and belief system from a whole generation, basically, on the left. And I'm not sure, even the other night when I bombed in front of lesbians, I was like, oh no, this shit's not going away. Because I was making, they should be on my side. I'm sticking up for women and lesbians who are being erased, by the way. But because I said, I was making a whole joke about the patriarchy so crafty, how I never really believed in the patriarchy, the feminism stuff. I was like, the radical feminists and the patriarchy stuff. I was like, come on, that gives them too much power. Like, well, the patriarchy, really, it sounds ridiculous. And then I was like, when men started taking women's awards in sports, and they all, you could see them viscerally all back up when I said men. And it's because they have been brainwashed into believing that trans women are women and trans men are, like, you cannot call a trans woman a man. And they reacted to that so in, and it was not good from there on out. But I was like, wow, this is their ideology. It's like their whole, you have to have some kind of, they can't, most people when faced with the kind of cognitive dissonance that these people are probably being faced with are not necessarily going to have some awakening. They're going to double down because it's just, it's generally what you do. It's easier. So I don't know. I don't know what happens to them.
I think that's a really important point that it's, you know, I think a lot of the discussion since Trump won has been, will the Democrats get their house in order? Will they pick a better leader next time? Will it be someone who can speak to normal working class people instead of, you know, someone like Kamala Harris, who just laughs hysterically and hangs out with Oprah and all that kind of stuff? But that tends to treat the problem at a very surface level. You know, it's almost as if they can switch the lights back on and everything will be fine. But as you say, it's much more structural than that. It's much more deep-rooted. It's in the campuses. It's in the business world. It's certainly in the political class and the media class. The other thing is, I agree with you about, you know, those in the media who have said, well, I knew all along that this was bullshit. They're cowards. But I welcome apostates. And if they want to come out and leave behind this craziness, that's all good. But at the same time, another part of me thinks, but however, we do need to talk about all the awful things that happened as a consequence of their ideology. Because I do worry sometimes that that might get glossed over. You know, the young women who lost body parts and the young lesbians who were drugged until they became men as if that was their correct sex, which, by the way, is a profoundly homophobic idea. Or, you know, the people who were cancelled, the people who lost their jobs, the people who were kicked out of their jobs in universities, kicked off social media because they were denounced as lunatics and transphobes and Islamophobes or whatever else it might be. I mean, this ideology that ruled the roost for quite some time, it had really, really bad consequences. So at the same time as welcoming the vibe shift that has occurred, we do need to talk about that stuff as well, don't we?
And it's still happening. You see it with the Daniel Perry, with his trial in New York, the guy, like all the stuff coming out about that. It's so wild how they changed the death. Like, he wasn't allegedly dead, and then they changed it when they saw the social media video. Like, so many things coming out about this are so nonsensical. And you have this because these ideologies, again, are in all of our institutions. And I don't think people understand that this, I actually do agree with Elon. Like, you need to get rid of this stuff. I hope they go in to our military and get rid of, like, get the DEI out of the military. What the F is going on? That is nonsense. There's nowhere, I can't think of anywhere that belongs less than the military, where it should just be, how prepared are you? Merit. Can you pass basic physical tests? And there's no inspiration to even join the military. There's no, you know, these are the people you're parading around. And I know the kind of men that join the military, they're certainly not looking at the trans woman director going, well, I feel like signing up and sacrificing my body for this country. It's crazy. Like, this stuff is, it's so many people have been calling it what it is, which is nonsense. And like you've said, you know, it undermines civilization itself, which is a very thin veneer that we've managed to cobble together in this tiny fraction of history where we're not all tribally at war and destroying each other. And I think what's good, the other thing I don't think enough people are paying attention to is that the Republicans are actually in founder mode. Like, they're, because there are so many, I think the private sector realized they had to get off their ass and actually participate, much to their chagrin, because the culture was shifting so far in the direction of regulation, overregulation, and not great for anyone who's trying to build anything anywhere. A lot of people got involved in the tech industry, and those guys are founders and they're in founder mode. And founder mode is exciting. It's optimistic. It's invigorating. It's, let's find the best people to make the best things and do the coolest ideas and spend millions of dollars on things that might not work just because we want to see what works the best. And I feel like that's where that real sense of optimism is coming from. Like, America used to be a place where you built stuff, and there was that sense of optimism around Elon aligning with Trump while Elon was also blasting rockets into space and rescuing, you know, astronauts. You're like, all right, maybe yeah. that guy knows something
yeah.
I don't.
Just maybe he does, yeah. Okay, that comment has made me feel a little bit more optimistic. I'm feeling optimistic anyway, but I think even more optimistic about the shift that has occurred in America, which will have repercussions for the whole world. And it seems to me pretty clear that, you know, when you boil it down, this is a largely working class revolt against the dangerous ideology of the ruling class. And that's a good thing. And we've seen yeah. other things like it in Europe yeah. as well, and Australia and other parts of the world. But this is such a clear statement of that, which I think is very enlivening and fun and good. My last question for you, Bridget, before I let you go, is, you've kind of touched on this already. You've said that you might think it's a huge mistake that you supported Trump. It might all go wayward and crazy. Who knows? That's politics. You can't quite tell what's going to happen next. But what's your feeling about how things will go? You know, there are so many kind of things at play here. I mean, his cabinet picks are interesting, even though everyone's going mad about them. But they do come from slightly different parts of the political world, so maybe they won't get on as well as they might otherwise be expected to. There's, of course, also the kind of, you know, will the lawfare against him continue? Will all that stuff get ramped up? Will the deep state get its knives out? You know, there are so many factors that we don't quite know what's going to happen. But what's your feeling about the Trump administration when it takes power early next year? How do you feel things will go?
A lot of it's going to be about optics, as usual. You know, if the mass deportations start and it's whatever the optics of that look like, if it's rounding up people and you have ICE going door to door and you've got camps where they're all staying, I think there's going to be a real sense of buyer's remorse from people who voted for Trump. If it looks Hitlerian at all. That kind of like, so I think a lot of that is very unknown. I worry Biden or this administration or the deep state or whoever is doing this gets us into World War III, and then Trump will be forced to like reinstate the draft or something like that, that they were very against. And now you're in a war and you need bodies and they have no choice but to do this. So things like that keep me up. Like, you know, thermonuclear war is something that I worry about. But in that instance, like, good luck to all of us. But yeah, things like that and this is where I just don't always trust. I don't trust Elon. I certainly don't trust Trump. They seem to do kind of whatever is right in front of them. I think Elon has a little bit more vision, and Trump is, you know, there will be consequences for dismantling all of the deep state if they actually can. You know, I worry about him getting assassinated too. I worry that they're not going to stop trying to kill him. And just not making good on some of the things that they promised the American people, but that's every administration. But they have some power right now. So it will be interesting to see what happens in the next 2 years, if they can actually make things. I would love to see like more stuff come back to the states that we're building. I think after seeing the supply chain, you know, how dependent we are on other countries, I personally would love if we brought more of our manufacturing back home and gave more people jobs. But I don't know. I'm not smart enough to like figure this stuff out. I would love to see real reform to our infrastructure. Like, not anyone who's ever used a government site in this country, you're like, how are these sites even functioning? They barely are. And we have real infrastructure, you know, problems and also weaknesses that I think need to be addressed. And I'm hoping like these smart tech people who are invested in this, in making America great again or whatever, those would be things I think you could do that would make people feel more secure, make people feel like America's like fix a lot of our crumbling infrastructure that's very old and outdated. I don't know though. I'm optimistic, but I'm also a cynic in that I see how hard it is to get anything done in politics. It seems very challenging. So these guys are founders. They're not politicians. Like Vivek and Elon and this like Department of Government Efficiency. Can you actually like audit this country, like the deficit, you know, my daughter's, she's going to have no money. It won't be worth anything. It's a huge problem. So we'll see if they can do anything about it. It would be really cool if they could. I try not to be like, no, this isn't going to happen because I now have a daughter that I want like to leave. I do find it optimistic though, like all of these people have children pretty much. Many of them. So they have, you know, there's real incentive to try and keep things, keep the quality of life improving. And I think for a lot of Americans, they've just felt like it hasn't been improving. You can't get a house until you're 40 or whatever. So I think getting things like that back, where like the American dream, quote unquote, is attainable for America, not just like people from other countries that were giving houses, like, and you know, Americans born here.
Bridget, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Brendan O'Neill Show. We'll be back with another guest and more discussion. Don't forget to subscribe. And in the meantime, keep reading Spiked at www.spiked-online.com.